Lenny Shulman is swinging into action, and we're going to reach out and get Steve Haskin. It's a tradition. In fact, Hammer, take that stick mic for a minute while we raise. Okay, you good? Well, pick that up. All right, and you can talk. Not drop it. There we go. you just put it back down while
we're live.
He just
dropped the mic.
But I'm bump. And talk to Lenny and say hello. And Deja, you can pull up Steve Haskin. In the meantime, we'll fold him in.
It's always a pleasure to see Lenny out here in California land.
They let him keep the Santa Anita jacket,
they didn't
which
take
is
it
very
away.
Impressive.
Now,
I have a whole new view of management now.
You know what? It's actually glowing now at night. In the morning, you can't see it. And actually, someone wanted to put the old black slot over it. But I do like the jacket. What can I tell you? I wore this in the wintertime out somewhere, and somebody saw it in another place and made a few comments, and I said, well, maybe I shouldn't wear it.
But, no, it's reversible.
It's a reversible. It's one of those ones you can roll into a little ball and put it in a, you know, like a 2x2 little stuff thing. I don't know how it works. It comes out. I'm still trying to, can they do this for, like, regular shirts where you can just roll in the ball and comes out and, you know, it's unwrinkled? I mean, it's unbelievable.
They do have those now, actually.
Yeah, it's called the cleaners.
They call it, I forget, wrinkle-free or...
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't...
It's called polyester.
I don't buy it. I
don't have the three-ring notebook here.
My first year I stepped up.
Look at this with the color-coded file fold. Look at this.
I've lost my mind. Hey, I'm at the school now. They provide. I looked at. They had notebooks. They had three-ring binders, and they had the hole punch. And I said, I'm going to be like Steve Bick. I seen him. Usually I'm struggling. The wind's blowing my stuff all over the place. So it's. You know, every moment is a teaching moment now.
Let me get my pencil case. Cow. Wait a second. My eraser is in the bag. Hold on. Have you seen the new auxiliary press box, Steve?
I have not gone down there yet.
You promised to go down there. You have to go back. It's
going to be like a track meet for you guys going to and from the winter circuit.
Yeah, it's a 3/8 of a mile, but nobody wants to leave because it's just so gorgeous. It's like it's like a common space from 1952. It's amazing down there.
Where is
right, right down the stairs? We're next to the betting windows. You're supposed to be writing while people are cursing.
Is Rosie still working during the day? Can just order a lunch.
Sandwich,
you're
yeah.
better off there. Yes. No. You really need to. Amazing accommodations. They turn the press box into a dining room, which will have six people in it tomorrow, and everybody's downstairs in a linoleum floor. It's great. With chairs like this that you can't sit in. Hammer, we miss you.
It wasn't that way when I was here.
No, absolutely not.
Is Steve Haskin lurking? Is he with us?
He might be in Nebraska visiting some...
No, not anymore.
No.
Did they all move?
Yes.
They did.
No, I think he is. Yes. I think he's there. Steve, good morning.
Good morning.
There's that mellifluous voice.
Mellifluous.
Mellifluous.
That's well, it's lefty. It's lefty Lenny. So he has to get left in there somehow. Steve, we miss you here.
Is it my turn?
It's absolutely.
Oh, okay. What would you like to talk about?
Lenny.
These horses are running around here. I just realized this. We're on the training track currently. For those who want to know, they're rolling the big machines over the main track, so everybody's running around the training track here. What a lovely view you have, Steve.
It is. This is always a delight up here, Steve. What has changed for you here the last few days since between the time of the pre-entries and now, the way the fields came together?
I would say I'm probably a bit more confused than I was before. Before I saw the past performances, and before I saw the thoroughbred figures, and before I saw the post positions, and before I saw everything, a typical Breeders' Cup. You just don't know what to expect. You don't know what to expect from the Eastern horses shipping west. You don't know what kind of racetrack you're going to get. I was told that they poured a truckload of sand down on the first four paths. I don't know what that means, but That's what I was told from someone who actually saw them do it. So I don't know. I don't know what that's going to do to the rail.
We'll get a couple of clues today. I mean, I think that's the best thing you can do is start out and watch how the track plays today, and then even for those that are really going to concentrate on the Cup races, see what happens. You got those two 7/8 races that we talked about with Brad Free, the Golden State Juvenile races. That's the best you can do. I mean, watch for the outside pad, see if horses are able to rally, or are horses getting mired down inside. I mean, the one thing you can tell is, the track is heavier and slower than ever before. That part is certain.
Well, that's one of the things you look at. One of the handicapping tools that nobody ever talks about anymore, that nobody ever looks at anymore, is the old fashioned track variant on the racing form or Equibase, whatever, past performances. That used to be all we had to go by. You had the track variant, the speed rating, and the track variant, and you would add them up, and you basically look at the track variant and look at the speed rating and get an idea of how fast the track really is. And nobody seems to use that anymore. And I still like to use it. And one of the things I had noticed looking at the track variant is that a horse like Dunbar Road, who's already been a mile and a quarter, and I think if the track is that deep, you want a horse with some foundation. I'm not saying she's good enough to win, but I'm just saying if you're looking for a horse that might be an overlay, her track variance in her last four races have been a 21, a 24, a 19, and an 18. I mean, that's all four of those racetracks were incredibly slow.
You're talking the late?
What's that?
Or who are you talking? You didn't say what horse.
Dunbar Road.
Dunbar Road. Okay.
Yeah. On the other hand, if you look at Midnight Bisou's her track variance this year, 5, 6, 6, 3, 9, 12, she's never run on a deep track. She did once, and the only time she ran on a track with a double-digit track variant, it was at Oakland Park, and she's barely won by a nose over a filly that was like probably at least five to ten lengths beneath her. So, I don't know if it means anything or not, because I don't know how the track is playing. I don't know how deep it's going to be, but if it is a deep racetrack and you're looking for a price and looking for somebody to beat a favorite, just know that Midnight Bisou loves a fast track. And a horse like Dunbar Road has been running on nothing but really, really deep tracks. When you start getting over 20 on a track variant, you're talking about extremely deep racetrack, and that's all she's been running on. So, just a little angle there. A lot of times I like to go back and look at old races, because take advantage of the lifetime past performances. And I had come up with something just shifting to the mile that you and Hammer exposed before I had a chance to mention it earlier, is that I have never seen this, that it is extremely feasible that the winners of the Classic, the Mile, and the Turf would have run 1, 2, 3 in a race 2 years ago. And I'm talking about Yoshida, Lucullen, and Bricks and Mortar. When they ran 1, 2, 3 in the Hill Prince, all three of those horses have a legitimate shot. Lucullen, I didn't even think was going to get in, and he managed to get in. And he's a much better horse. I mean, he was out for 14 months when he got beat at Woodbine, and he started drifting at the end. It was under constant left-handed whipping, and he shied from it. But he was right there at the finish, and then he comes back and he runs a mile and eighth to 1:46 and change in the Knickerbocker over a turf course that really wasn't that fast. So he's, sort of a long shot angle, except you guys beat me to it.
I do love that, though, that the three of them, you know, come out of that race on the back. And you know, that's an angle that very frequently you get to certain points in the year and you look back at races. When you see horses in bold type that have faced each other, a lot of times I'll just reach right back because there's an indication that it was a good race, and the fact that those horses are all reassembling at the end of the season in the Breeders' Cup, that kind of tells you already that they were, you know, doesn't matter what time of year it was, here they are, and they've continued on toward, you know, end of the year goals. So I happen to love that. I mean, this is a race that obviously is further back for everybody, but the three of them all kind of went in different directions. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's the fun part of it.
Yeah,
you know, those were the three, you know, headline races. I guess you can include the distaff too, but for Colts, those were the three big races, which require three totally different types of horses, and you could get the winners of all three of those races coming out of the same race. I mean, I find that extremely fascinating.
Well, none of them will win, but
I said it's feasible. Who do you like to beat Bricks and Mortar?
Well, no, I'm not talking about Bricks and Water, but I think Stormy has them over a barrel in the mile. I think this turf course is rock hard. It hasn't rained here in about 17 years, and she's going to love it. Steve and I already talked about the Woodbine race. I mean, she got the lead too soon. That stretch is too long there. So the loss there really is a throwout. I just think she's going to lay over this field and,
Stormy. I like her a lot. I think she got a terrible ride in that race. But you said all three of these horses were going to get beat. That's why I was asking you who you like to beat.
It was a little exaggeration. But the other thing, I just want to go back to your point about the track. You know, Midnight Beast, I don't think this track is going to play any deeper or slower than the track at Saratoga. And, you know, if it's similar to that sort of track, Midnight Bisou ran down a late on that track, and
that was a very fast racetrack.
Yeah,
did you see the times of the races that day? 120 and change, 121 flat.
But believe me, when you have Bob Baffert chirping in the ear of the track super here seven times a day, you're not going to get a track that's, you know, crazy deep. I don't think. I'm not sure it's going to be, you know, no, as slow as we might.
Omaha Beach,
out on
the track.
Like what Brad Free says, I think what you see today and tomorrow is what you're going to get on Saturday. I don't think they're going to juice it up like Churchill Downs does for the Derby. I mean, I don't know. I have no clue what it's going to be like. So, you know, it's just a guess. You just got to see how it's playing, how the rail is playing, and how the horse is doing on the inside. So today is going to be like an experimental day.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I thought it was interesting that they didn't run yesterday, and I said, well, you know, they couldn't have scared up an extra day, and somebody made the statement, well, they don't want to take the chance of something happening.
I know you hate to say it, but you know, I wish you luck.
Well, it's on everybody, so I haven't seen one person here that, you know, it's not on somebody's mind here, and it's a shame that it has to be in the forefront like that, but, you know, it's a fact of life at this particular moment, at this particular place, but, you know, and so many people not involved in the sport, you're in town, you know, the horse, oh, what's going on out there, and you try to explain that, you know, You don't want to say that it's the norm, but you have to explain that, you know, this really isn't that unusual other than the publicity, you know. I mean, you talk to any farm manager in Kentucky, the first thing out of their mouth is these horses spend all day trying to figure out ways to kill themselves. and it's so true. They'll run through fences. They'll spook. They'll flip over. I mean, it's a fact of life. The public just doesn't understand it. But, you know, unfortunately, that's what we're having to deal with here. But yes, let's hope that we get through this without anything of that nature. So I just wanted what you were saying before, Steve, about being more confused and the changes. I mean, the juvenile, which I'm covering, I may be crazy, but I was at Keeneland for the Breeders' Futurity. I thought Maxfield was immensely impressive that day, and I thought
he was going to have a huge
chance in there, and so the complexion of that race just completely changed. And I even got out of Baffert yesterday that's a huge scratch there. I mean that just changes the whole deal there, and you know, it's going to be exciting. I mean, it might just turn out to be a match race with those two horses eyeballing each other. I don't know.
That's the whole thing. You don't know. I mean, you know, how do you play this? You can't bet those two horses, so you got to start fooling around in the exotics. I think it definitely moves Scabbard up. I mean, you certainly can't fault that horse. So you start looking at trifectas. I think Dennis's Moment is going to be he's getting so much play right now. I mean, everybody just thinks that he seems to be a lot. But, you know, if you put Dennis's Moment on top of a horse like Scabbard, if you want to take a shot, if you put eight ring second and they run 1-2, you're not going to get anything, no matter what. So you got to take a shot that maybe eight rings is still a little green, and maybe he's just not quite as good as Baffert thinks he is. But there are some horses you can use, you know, behind him. You know, one of the horses that I think it was it Brad? I guess it was Brad who mentioned Shoplifted.
Yeah.
I was at Saratoga when he broke his maiden, and the next morning I saw Scott Blassie, and I said, well, I got my first horse for the Derby Trail. I mean, that horse was extremely impressive, and I thought he ran well enough to be second in the hopeful. And Brad was so right about that American Pharoah. Watch that race. He was six wide on both turns, and he made an incredible move on the turn. And he just started shortening stride in the stretch, and he barely galloped out afterwards. He was obviously exhausted. You know, he just asked to do too much. But with this race, his first two-turn race under his belt, you never know. He's got a shot in there, you know. So, you know, a horse like Storm the Court, if you like these California horses, I mean, you got to respect Peter Urton. And it's let me ask you a question. Does anybody have a clue about this Anno d'Or? I mean, the horse looked like, he looked like some superstar on the grass. I know it was at Golden Gate in his first start, but that race was unbelievable. I don't know how he's going to handle it. He's by Medaglia d'Oro out of a Tappet mare. And, you know, Blaine Wright's a good trainer. They're bringing him up here. I have no clue what this horse is going to do. If he likes the dirt as much as he likes the grass, I don't know how good this horse is. Does anybody have a clue?
No. It's a fair question. I saw him on the track about right before the break, and you know, it's funny you bring him up.
I know, you know, on that first race, I know it was a Golden Gate, but he looked like Big Brown. Remember when he won that first start? You look at him and said, "Well, I don't know, is this a freak or is this some grass freak or just a can it convert that to dirt?" I don't know if this horse can. I mean, Blaine Wright's he's been around. He's a top trainer. He's had a horse. Major horse on a Derby Trail, you know, in the last couple of years. For him to go to the Breeders' Cup, or for a horse that's never run on a dirt, who ran at Golden Gate, you know, he was 6-5 in his first start. The word obviously was out on him. But you look at his pedigree, you know, you got a Medaglia d'Oro out of a Tappet mare. Who runs a horse like that on the grass first time? He obviously was looking for a distance race for him. So, I don't know. You know, he's been working over the synthetic surface. He's been working bullets. He's been working tremendously there. I don't know. I would certainly put him, you know, at the back end of a trifecta just for the heck of it.
Yeah, no, it's fair. And I know this is a Breeders' Cup show, not a Derby show, but thousand words the other day. I mean, if he didn't look like an early Derby horse, I don't know who does. I mean, that was a hell of a performance.
Lenny, he answered every question I'd love to see in a first-time starter in a young horse. When you go off at like, what, 6-5 or 7-5, and you're not the favorite, and you outgame the horse that is the favorite, who finishes like eight lengths or whatever it is ahead of the third horse, that is the ingredients for a classy race. So this horse has already answered the questions of gameness, that he can outdistance a field, even though he won, you know, by narrow margin. The horse that he beat was the favorite over him, who had a big race.
Yeah.
He had run a really good second. He had the advantage over him. This is a very good horse.
Yeah. Yeah, they both look good, actually. And Jerry Moss's horse looked good also. Yeah.
Well, it's funny. Last night, Jack Knowlton, Steve, introduced somebody just caught my eye. This 863, that's Shaden, the juvenile turf participant, just did a little back, a little two-hoofed back kick, feeling good out here on a chilly morning. Jack Knowlton introduced Tim Wilkin, Steve, for the at the Turf Riders dinner, and of course, you know, one of the stories here that, as you guys reference, is the two-year-old males that did not make the trip. Tis the law, and
what do we need his horse?
You know, Jimmy Jerkins, of course, with Green Light Go. You know that some of the ones that were a little more late starting to counterbalance that, though. And you can understand what Simon Callahan is thinking with Donna Veloce running out of your own stall. Second career start. It'd be the first time in Breeders' Cup history that you know, could possibly be pulled off. And it does feel like the Philly side of things. I'm getting a sense that everybody feels that they won't be surprised by, you know, by some of the winners. I'm not overwhelmed by Bast, the Baffert filly. I'll tell you who looks like she's got a little bit of a shot in there is that Lazy Daisy, who has done terrific since the win. And, you know, O'Neill thought enough to take her out of town. I found myself surprised that I used her. Yeah.
But I got to tell you, just from a visual, listen, you certainly cannot knock the Frisette winner, and you can't knock the Alcibiades winner. But what, and I know you're always up against it when you ask a horse to come off for one sprint race, stretch out into a grade one against all these seasoned horses. But boy, that filly looked like an absolute freak. I mean, that was one of the, you can't ask a horse to win more impressively first time out. I was kind of surprised at the Thoroughbred figures. I mean, her figures are a bit slower than those other fillies. But if she progresses off of it, you know, she gets, I mean, she could just move up 3 or 4 points off that race. But from a visual standpoint, that filly could be really something special. I mean, if somebody, like, singled her in that race, I could certainly understand it, because this filly looked freakish.
Yeah, I thought Comical got back on the beam last time out, too, after a couple of subpar races for Doug also. And you got to root for
filly.
You got to root for Eric Johnson, who owns both Lazy Daisy and Comical, a fantastic hockey player and a great backer of the thoroughbred industry, and a huge fan who, unfortunately, is playing back-to-back games this weekend and can't be here. But just a big-time new guy in the sport who's fantastic.
He loves it. He's been on with me.
Fantastic.
He absolutely loves it.
And this would be so much, and he also has Bowie's Hero in the miles. So even with Landeskog going out, Eric's going to be fully represented.
How about Landeskog comes out, and then hours later, Landeskog gets on
player.
The DL with a lower body strain. It's the craziest thing ever. Unbelievable.
I didn't know that, really. That's
wild. Yeah, he got hurt, and he's on the sidelines. It's crazy.
Oh, wow, that is
There's
funny.
Something going on.
a couple of tweets. This can't be a coincidence.
Too funny.
Steve, I want to ask you, before we talk classic and get some final picks and so forth, talk about the dirt mile, because this is a more, you know, for a race that none of us really, you know, are thrilled about it being, you know, taking away from other events, whether it's the sprint or the classic. I find it a fun race, and the three-year-olds make it, you know, particularly interesting when you start with Omaha Beach and Improbable, Spun to Run, who's really emerged, you know, since the Haskell and you know, so forth. Mr. Money,
Hawk
who's
Creek
done nothing
Hustle.
Wrong. Hawk Creek Hustle. Hawk Creek Hustle sprinting, though.
Well, first of all, you know how I feel about a two-turn mile. So, to me, the race is a bit of a joke that really doesn't prove anything. A horse I'm kind of looking at at a price, a horse you didn't mention, a horse that's, he's as fast as anybody in the race, is Giant Expectations. I got tremendous respect for Peter Orton. I thought his last race was excellent. I think he's a hard knocking horse. His thoroughbred that he's coming off of, he ran a negative 2.5. So I mean he's as fast as anything that Omaha Beach has ever run. Actually ran faster. He ran a negative 2.75. Omaha Beach ran a negative 2.25 in his last start. So, you know, to me this is one of those hard knocking horses that I wouldn't be surprised if he won. But you know, separating these other horses, you know, I heard you talking earlier about Improbable that, but you know, Baffert is talking his horse up so much, and when he does, that usually means that they're going to run a monster race. But it also means that when he talks up a horse like that, they're going to get bet. And I just don't know if I want to bet him at 5-2 or 3-1 or whatever he's going to be. It depends on how much they bet Omaha Beach. You know, I mean, I don't know if Omaha Beach is going to, quote, bounce off that last race or what he's going to do here. It's a fun race in one respect, but in the other respect, it doesn't. Like I said, it's like running a mile and 70-yard race or a mile and a 16th. It doesn't prove anything. It doesn't do anything. But we'll see. It's just a waste not to have a flat mile. I know you can't have it. There's nothing you can do about it. But you know, this race over the years, there's been races where it wasn't even run at a mile. So and it was certain years it wasn't even run on the dirt when it was on synthetic. So, I mean, the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, you know, has not been run on the dirt at a mile every year. So
this happens to be a more intriguing field than a classic.
As runnings on the go, this is pretty interesting.
It really is.
Oh,
I mean, when you look at
interesting, though, right?
Catalina Cruiser and all. By the way, Giant Expectations, for those who may not have read it, flipped over yesterday morning.
He's fine. I mean, those things happen. I mean, the thing is, if you watched him gallop after he did it, it obviously did not affect him at all. He's galloping around there with dirt all over his body and all over the exercise rider's body. But I mean, you know, when does this horse ever run a bad race? I mean, and not only that, by the way, but you know, his last two races when he was beating Photos was his first two races that he had blinkers on. This is his third race blinkers on. You know, he puts blinkers on him. He runs a 98 buyer and then a 104 buyer in the Pat O'Brien, and he just gets beat, you know, by a very good horse. The horse that obviously is going to be one of the favorites in the Dirt Mile. So, I mean, it's going to, you know, I find him a very, very interesting horse.
I mean, do you really worry about Omaha Beach bouncing? I mean, the horse has never
raced in his life.
No,
I mean, I don't know. I don't think that race. I think he's an exceptional horse.
Yeah.
I think he's special. I'm still ticked off he's not running next year. You know, and I know Rick Porter's, you know, trying to convince Wayne Hughes to run him because you know he has. After the Pegasus World Cup, he loses control of the horse. But listen, he's the one who sold him the breeding rights. So I mean, you got to take what you get out of it.
You can't put the fizz back. Yeah, you can't put the fizz back in the bottle if you're gonna sell him. You sell him.
Exactly. I mean, hey, listen. How do you think we feel here? Looking ahead, this is what racing has become. Let's say Eight Rings wins this race big. And it becomes the early favorite for the Kentucky Derby. Here's a horse who hasn't even gotten to the Breeders' Cup yet, and you know he's not going to run as a 4-year-old. I mean, how early are you going to sell the breeding rights to these horses?
Well,
it's not unusual.
But it's not unusual. I mean, Paul Redham sold Nyquist at Keeneland in the fall of his 2-year-old year. Breeder's Futurity time. So, yeah, all you can hope for is the Pegasus at this point. But, yeah, it is. It's not good
for the sport. These horses aren't going to get strong fan bases if you know so early that you got to take what you get with them now because you're not going to get anything with them, you know, as four-year-olds. So, I mean, that's what I mean. It's just happening way too soon. I'm not going to blame anybody. If they want to take the money, fine. Just don't, you know, don't complain about it. You know, don't complain. You say, oh, I want to run them at four. If you want to run them at four, then you should have kept them at four. You know?
True.
Let's put it this way. A horse like Omaha Beach, he's one horse that if he wins this race, and let's say he wins the Malibu, and let's say even if he wins the Pegasus, it will be so unfulfilling because the more he wins now, the more you're saying to yourself, God, what would this horse do as a four-year-old? You know, people forget that if Affirmed and Seattle Slough had retired at the end of their three-year-old years, even having won the Triple Crown, yeah, they would have been known as great horses, because who had won the Triple Crown, but they would not have been one of the all-time greats as they are, because they ran at four. Four-year-old campaign stamped them as an all-time great.
And that's the difference between them and Justify, absolutely, without a doubt. But the thing with Omaha Beach, the shame there is Rick Sullivan before the Derby, and we didn't get to see him through the Triple Crown Series. Never mind, as a four-year-old, we didn't get to see him through the Triple Crown Series. Plus, we're not getting to see him going forward. So,
right.
So, you know, it was just it was great timing for him to sell the horse, but unfortunately, as a fan, you know, like you say, with a special horse, you know, we kind of took it in the shorts for both angles, as a three-year-old and as an older horse.
I know. The thing is, there's a part of you that is saying, I don't want him to do too much, because the more he does, the more frustrating it's going to be when they retire him in January.
Triple.
You know, I don't want to think that this horse has the potential to be one of the all-time greats, and we're never going to find out about it. So, you know, it's just mixed feelings. I'm rooting for the horse. I like Rick Porter, and I love the horse. You know, he was far and away my number one horse for the Derby. But it's just frustrating. And I'll tell you another horse, Lenny, who I'm sure you totally agree with me. How good would Bernardini have been as a four-year-old?
Through the roof. Yeah. Now look what he's doing now as a broodmare sire.
The
horse is the broodmare sire of six Grade One winners, I think, in the last 3 months.
Yeah,
I know. And the thing is, you know, they're breeding all these like Into Mischief types and Spikestown, all these kind of horses, to Bernardini mares, and they're getting infused. They're infused with all the stamina, and all these Into Mischiefs and Spikestowns and City Zips and everything like that. You breed them to a Bernardini mare, and boy, they're stretching out.
Yeah, no, and you know, Steve, you and I were begging our case to the Darley people at Saratoga after he won the Travers. Yeah, we were literally begging them not to retire the horse, even though I think we both realized that how effective that was going to be.
Oh, God, what a monster he would have been. And the thing is, he got beat in the Classic, so give him a chance to run back again. Look what they did with Enable. You know, she gets beat, and because she gets beat, they're keeping her in training for a whole other year to try again.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, if Judmon could do it, you would think, well, you know, Darley, I mean, that much of a rush, you can't wait a year. You've got a horse that is going to be an absolute superstar. And I think, and this is just a theory, I think one of the reasons they retired him is all the pressure that all the Godolphin people were throwing on the air because they couldn't make him a Godolphin horse. They couldn't run
right.
They couldn't turn him over to Rick McTee because they couldn't take him away from Tommy Albertrani, so he had to run in Darley colors, and that was against everything they stood for because that was at the time when they wanted all the cream of the crop to run under the Godolphin blue. That was what Godolphin came to represent. The best of the best that they had, and to run, and if they ran him in Godolphin's colors, they would have to take him away from Tommy and give him to Rick Mattee over there under the banner of Saeed Bin Sarur.
We have not to interrupt you, Steve, we have a parade going on the track right now. Who, Steve Bick, are these all Colmore horses?
Of course.
Yeah,
of course.
We have the Aidan O'Brien 10 horses parading one after the other, jogging around the main track.
It was the charge of the light parade.
It's like the Clydesdales just came out on the track or something.
It was great. I got a little video of it. I'll slap it up.
What an extraordinary vision that was. That was incredible.
I think I got the video of it, so I'll put it up. Steve, shift gears, and a few more minutes, and we got to wrap, but your classic thoughts, finally.
Well, I have a lot of different angles as far as who I like and who I'm betting. But listen, I'm going to stick with Vino Rosso. I mean, I'm not going to go off him now. I've been with him too long. But I tell you, there are two bombs in here, and one of them we've already discussed. Seeking the Soul. The more I look at him, the more I think he's ready for a huge race. You know, I don't know if you still like him as much as you did when we spoke.
I do. I absolutely am using him prominently. And in fact, we were busy earlier, and this morning he came out. I love the way he looked earlier this morning.
He's been training great, and you realize that he and McKenzie both have the highest thoroughgraph figure in the field, a -3.5. One's going to be the favorite, and the other's going to be 30-1. And he's trained by someone who's been absolutely deadly in big races with 30-1 shots. Plus, Seeking the Soul ran a -3 last fall, so you know he can repeat that number. I love the fact that he's been in California for so long. His first race was an absolute toss because of the thumps, the electrolyte imbalance. And I thought his fourth in Austin again was a decent enough comeback race. It was a speed favoring track, did not suit his style. He was too close to the pace, and I can't imagine he was 100% into that race. Supposedly, according to Dallas Stewart, he's bounced out of that race looking great. He's going to appreciate the larger field and the more contentious pace. And the statistic I gave you earlier when you had Sid on, that three of his four great grandsires ran the three fastest Kentucky Derbies in history, Secretariat, Monarchos, and Northern Dancer. So I just think that the fact that they sent him out there, they're so intent on winning this race that they passed up the Whitney, they passed up the Woodward, they passed up the Lucas Classic that they could have won at their home track. He's got seven triple-digit buyer speed figures, his second only to McKenzie. So he's won grade one, he's won grade two races. He ran a huge race in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile last year at the City of Light and finished second to him again in mile and eighth in the Pegasus World Cup. Whether he's good enough to win, I don't know, but I can certainly see him finishing in the money here. And the other horse, who nobody mentions at all, who's totally forgotten, is Mongolian Groom. And I don't think people realize how good that last race was. If you watch that race, this horse, sure, you want to say he stole the race, but he comes home in 12-1, and he's 15 lengths in front on the gallop out before they even reach the turn. He just wanted to keep going and going. If you look at this horse's pedigree, I mean, this horse's pedigree is amazing. His two grandsires are Mineshaft and Dynaformer. He's inbred to two Triple Crown winners, as well as two horses that won two legs of the Triple Crown, in Nashua and Northern Dancer. He's got Roberto. He's got AP Indy. His third dam is Versailles Treaty, who won the Alabama at 1.25. I mean, he's got the pedigree. And you look at his earlier races in the San Diego Handicap and in the Pacific Classic. I thought he ran terrific races there, and I think he's getting good right now, but I'm not saying he's going to win, but it wouldn't shock me. It certainly wouldn't shock me if he finishes in the money.
How about another bomb, Steve? We just talked about Bernardini as a broodmare sire. How about Owendale?
You know what? I looked at him. He was going to be my bomb. I was all set to make a case for him. And again, I probably shouldn't do this, but his thoroughgraph numbers are just too slow. They just don't come anywhere near, you know, comparing to the older horses here that have run there. So maybe he's a big, strong, scrapping horse, and I know Brad Cox thinks he's doing phenomenal right now, and it wouldn't shock me, but you know, I just couldn't go any deeper. I mean, you know, you got Yoshida, you got Elite, you got McKenzie, who I think is going to run a huge race. You got, you know, higher power. I just couldn't I couldn't go to the next tier to get a horse who's never run a negative thoroughbred number, while all these other horses have all run negative numbers, negative two and a half, two, negative threes, and
well, that's so, why he's going to be a bomb.
Yeah, he will be a bomb. So, but I could listen. If he won the race, it's not going to shock me. But I couldn't reach that far if I'm going to use thoroughbred numbers as a handicapping tool, which I do. I don't swear by it, but I use it. So I just backed off him. But you know, I thought he ran a good race in the Oklahoma Derby against.
No, he's sharp. He seems very sharp.
The
right
point,
now.
The aspect of Owendale as an include here is that arguably his best race came at the Preakness at the mile and 3/16 distance, and he's getting another chance at beyond 9 furlongs plus, and he's obviously an older, more mature horse. You know, here it's what, 5 months later. So that's the plug for Owendale, that if you believe in him, that's the thing you should hang your hat on.
And Bernardini is the fruit.
And the Bernardini,
I'm telling you, it's the best angle going. It's the best angle going right now. I'm telling you.
Well, the thing is, he was the horse I was referring to when I talked about the sire on top. You know, he's got that into mischief on top, and yeah. Normally they need help, and he gets the help from Bernardini. The one race, by the way, people are going to look at his Travers. That's a total throwout race. He was stuck on a dead rail the whole race. He couldn't get off the rail anywhere. And if you watch him at the eighth pole, he's right there. He's right there. He just got tired in the last eighth of a mile. Now, whether it was the intermischief coming out in him, but I think more was the fact that I think he was stuck on a dead rail. I just don't know if he's fast enough right now to against older horses. I think he could be a monster next year, but. Again, you got to eliminate some of them, and that's the only thing I went by. Eliminated him with just the thoroughbred numbers. That was it. Is he your win pick?
Oh, I don't know. I'm just saying. I did a story recently, and I went back over, you know, the 6 Grade 1 winners that he's had as a broodmare sire, and it's just he's on the most remarkable run that I've seen, and I have cashed some tickets at Keeneland on broodmare sires this past meet, and I'm just very conscious of it. I used Arch, who's a phenomenal broodmare sire, and cashed some very nice tickets that way. So I don't know. It's my angle. Now that APN doesn't have any sons and daughters running anymore, I got to go to the broodmare sire.
I know. Well, the thing is, you've never been big on APN. I mean, for a rooting interest, you know, you've always just looked at APN as a sire. But I think, like you said, now that he's getting old, now you got to start looking at APN as a broodmare sire, and definitely Bernardini as a broodmare sire.
Yeah, and you remember how much we got to play around with Bernardini after he won the Preakness when he was stabled at Belmont, which he should have run in and would have won by 20 lengths also. But he's such a great horse to be able to mess around with Tom Albertroni and his staff or something.
Saratoga, remember Saratoga when we went to see him?
Yeah. So, special horse.
Steve, a couple of oddball horses that you don't hear anybody talking about that you know you're going to throw a couple of bobs on. Anywhere in the 2 days.
Real oddball horses.
Sure.
Well, I tell you one thing. It's not an oddball, but you know, I really like Come Dancing in the Philly Mass Sprint. But I got to tell you, by the way, I love Bellafina cutting back to a sprint race. You know, she's undefeated at Santa Anita. I think she could pick up pieces at the end, and I think she's definitely. She's definitely one that I would look at. Look, I'll give you the oddest ball of them all. And I'm not saying I love the horse, but I tell you one thing: the way this horse is training, I don't know. But I tell you, nobody's been training better than Blue Chipper, the Korean horse. He's looked fantastic in the morning. I have no clue how good he is. But, you know, I mean, if you're looking for an oddball horse, he certainly is as odd as they get.
He's running as smooth as a Kia.
Or a Hyundai.
You know, and also, I'll tell you
Hyundai
what,
to the windows.
If there's a pace meltdown, if there's a pace meltdown in this sprint for some reason,
yeah,
I wouldn't throw out Whitmore. I mean, I know he's getting old in there, but you look at his race in the sprint last year, and he's a horse that could come running. He woke up like crazy in that Phoenix. So there's a horse in the mile, by the way, too. That's a real oddball horse. A horse called Trey Fleur.
I just saw Trey Fleur out here minutes ago. Funny that you bring up Trey Fleur.
Take a look at his PPs. I mean, he's got a pretty big shot in there. But I mean, you know, in the turf, a big price I'd look at there is United. The turf doesn't thrill me at all. I tell you, horse nobody's mentioning, by the way. And if there's anybody that can beat Sister Charlie, a horse like Fleeting. If she gets
all the bad trips,
the worst luck of any horse I've ever
yep,
seen in my
terrible
life.
Luck. Terrible luck.
Horrible luck. If she gets a clear trip, she can beat Sister Charlie. She's a very, very good filly.
Yeah.
She's probably the best.
That's fair.
Where was she? 2-for-12 or something? She's probably the best 2-for-12 filly I've ever seen. But boy, she's got a hell of a closing kick. She just gets shut off every time.
Yep, there's no doubt. And I finally I got a nice good look this morning at Fanny Logan, who I know I'm gonna use prominently.
The thing is you got Gosden. John Gosden.
I was with her last night, I think.
Fanny Logan?
Yeah.
John Gosden admitted he made a huge mistake trying to make an Oaks filly out of her. You know, running her in a mile and a half in the Ribblesdale and running her in the Chester Oaks, you know, at a distance, and he, you know, realized that she wasn't ready to go a distance. So he started from scratch. He started running her in cheaper races, and he's moved her up to Group 3. She's won 4 in a row. I don't know if she's good enough, but don't ever sell John Gosden.
Exactly. Steve, I appreciate it, and enjoy the next couple of days. Lenny, some final thoughts from you?
I can't get over the Hartford Whalers sticker on the back of your laptop. It's phenomenal.
Isn't that great?
I'm looking forward very much to the juvenile tomorrow. The way Dennis's moment looks out on the track is pretty amazing, and so I think it's that versus the Bob Baffert factor, and I just think it's a fascinating race. I thought it was a more fascinating race with the three big colts, but very much looking forward to the juvenile tomorrow. It's a good headliner for Friday, although I wish there was a little more juice on the Friday card, but should be a great weekend.
Lenny, do you have any
particular rooting interest in the two races you're covering? From a riding standpoint?
No. I'm going in a completely
Sorry, no,
the power just went out. I think there's a...
If the gong show is still around, that's that sound in the background.
PG&E just came by and cut the power to us.
That's right, that's great.
Can anyone, I'm going to ask a serious question. When they cut the power, what does that do? What is the advantage of cutting the power?
It prevents a surge of electricity that furthers the fires or something, I don't know.
Thank you. And I'm asking a guy from Kentucky where they only have matches. If somebody lights a match, there's a fire.
We never have electricity. What the hell do I know?
What was the question? I used to work for finance.
Too funny.
You can't
somebody lit a cigar. Call the fire department.
Steve Haskin, Lenny Shulman, everybody, and we'll do some recapping with Steve next week. Lenny, thanks a lot.
All right. Great to be here.
We'll stay here. We've got Jay Pribman was here, and I don't want to start something if Jay's coming back. That's the issue, and here he comes. Let me get Jay. We'll do the last from 10 up, okay, with Carolyn? Yeah. Yeah. That's what we'll do.
I got a gentleman here who's brother, he's a longtime fan here, his brother gave you a belt buckle at Los Alamitos.
We got to get you, George, yeah, sure, sure. Absolutely. I've got to get, Tony's got the goggles for him. I got to, yeah. All right. Well, I've got to get the, I lost the address. It's too nice of you to come by. George is wonderful.
We're traded stories about living in the infield as kids. Just now, that's how we met. He goes, my brother gave Steve a belt buckle.
Jay Privman is going to step in and get Jay's final thoughts leading in to Breeders' Cup. And it's been a whirlwind morning. There we go.
It's like Elaine wiping off the bottle.
Jay,
in the gym.
Good
in
morning.
Seinfeld.